Welcome to Prescription Health, a Tabula Rasa healthcare podcast. Prescription Health addresses the evolution of healthcare by focusing on news, developments, and predicted growth in value-based care models, including PACE. Join us every month for insightful conversations with subject matter experts by subscribing or visiting us at tabularasahealthcare.com/podcasts.
Hello and namaste, everyone. I'm Dr. Ankur Patel, Chief Medical Officer, Tabula Rasa Healthcare, and author of the book, Age is Just a Number. Welcome to the episode of Prescription Health, our expanded podcast, formerly known as Keep Up with PACE. I'm pleased to introduce today's guest, Dr. Mike Brett, Senior Vice President, Chief Medical Officer, Capstone Risk Adjustment Services, a CareVention healthcare solution. Namaste, Dr. Brett, and welcome to Prescription Health.
Thanks for inviting me, Ankur. Pleased to be on.
No, thank you for being on the show. Tell us about your background, that how you got involved with PACE.
It's been interesting. I've practiced geriatric medicine here just outside Pittsburgh for decades, if you will, and was frustrated back in the late 1990s. Our hospital system had a comprehensive geriatric assessment program, and I was the medical director, and we had a master's degree social worker and RN. We tried to do holistic care for the elderly. But back then, it didn't work because the hospital basically had to fund it. Everything was CPT coding, and there was just no way really to be able to charge for the services you were providing over a couple of hours. So that was really quite frustrating. But that was my initial foray into holistic care for the elderly, if you will. But then in 2004, my county had a PACE program that opened. Lutheran Senior Life was the sponsor. And the initial social worker was a very, very good friend of mine. And after a couple of times her cajoling me to become the medical director and me turning her down because I was too busy, I got a phone call from her and she basically said, "Mike, I'm calling in a favor." And I said, "Well, what's the favor?" She said, "I want you to meet with the CEO of this parent company because you would really be the best medical director." And so I went at 7 o'clock in the morning to a little coffee shop with a scowl on my face and a chip on my shoulder, hoping to have a 15-minute conversation with this CEO and tell him how wonderful his program was and then leave and go make rounds at the hospital. I was already late. And what I thought would be a 15-20 minute conversation, I was there for an hour and 45 minutes, literally.
Wow.
And I left there saying, "Of course I'll be your medical director." And the reason being is because I got introduced to the most wonderful way to care for the elderly, and that's PACE. And so I learned in 2004.
Yeah, I call PACE is like a Disney World for the geriatrician where all of our dream comes true.
Oh, right. Ankur, I'm fond of saying that I drank the Kool-Aid in 2004 and I drink it every day since. I totally believe in this model of care.
I love it. And for the audience, a lot of people may not know, but Dr. Brett was the first one actually who kind of helped me and mentored me and walked me into PACE when I started working as a medical director in a program in South Jersey. So Dr. Brett, tell me about your transition. So you were the medical director in a PACE program, and what transition you to what you do today with Capstone?
You know, Ankur, I didn't think I would ever leave being a medical director of a PACE program. Once I got in that position, I thought it was like the ideal job for a geriatric physician. But in 2004, when I was, starting to get introduced to PACE, that's also when risk adjustment came in. Interestingly, prior to that time, the way PACE programs got paid for Medicare A and B, that was prior to Part D, if you recall, the way they got paid was they looked at the county payment rate, and then I don't know who came up with the number, but it was around 2.37. Someone may on this podcast be able to correct it. It was thereabouts. So everyone just took 2.37 times their county payment rate, and that's how they got paid for Medicare A and B. But then risk adjustment came in, and so it was just coming in as I was learning to be a PACE medical director, so it was part of my initial training, if you will. And I just got really interested in it and started investigating it myself and did a couple of presentations in risk adjustment for NPA, National PACE Association, and Dick Shamp, Dr. Shamp, who was the founder of Capstone, knew I had some interest in that. And Capstone in 2013 was just a very small organization. I like to say we were still a mom and pop shop. And over at a conference with Care Kinesis, actually, Dick asked me if I'd be interested in working with him. And I took some time PTO and would travel with him and so enjoyed what he did that I left being a PACE medical director to work to eventually become full-time with Capstone. I like to say it's because working with Dr. Shamp wasn't fun. It wasn't fun at all. It was an absolute joy. And I just so thoroughly enjoyed the chance of spending time with him and learning from him.
Yeah. And for the audience, Dr. Dick Shamp has dedicated many of his years in PACE, and he was a previous medical director in PACE and then started Capstone. And he has mentored a lot of young medical directors when me and my other colleagues were starting in PACE. And thank you, Dr. Shamp, for what you have done for us and for PACE. So, Dr. Brett, what does Capstone do for PACE organizations?
Well, at a high level, we help PACE organizations with their compliance, and we help them optimize their risk scores. I would look at it from that perspective. We do help with compliance, both with our auditing and also with physician education. And we optimize their risk scores, again, through a number of mechanisms. So we like to think that we help PACE programs be audit ready. They're fully in compliance with the regulations and are optimizing their risk scores. That would be the high level view of what we do.
So, and one thing that Dr. Brett has taught me is Ankur, to use the word optimize risk score, not maximize risk score. Correct, Dr. Brett?
Very true. Yes, I will say that you PACE programs, for the most part, working with us, see an improvement in their risk score. But there was one time, 8 or 9 years ago, we were working with a PACE program whose risk score was very high because the providers were inadvertently, they weren't trying to commit, you know, Medicare fraud, but they were inadvertently upcoding a lot of diagnoses. And so we actually helped them get their risk score down. And they're now thriving very well and knowing that they're now audit ready. So, yes, so we like to think about optimizing risk scores, not necessarily thinking about maximizing.
Yeah, and I know that Capstone has like normally three ways that or three services that they provide for this whole risk adjustment services, the auditing, the coding, and the education part. So can you briefly explain what the auditors do, the coders do, but then expand more in on the education part, because that is always directly from you to the medical directors?
Oh, sure. So we have a three-armed approach, plus coding, I would suggest, Ankur. So auditing is very, very important. We look at semi-annual visits. Typically, that's when all the codes are being submitted. And we look to find out which of the codes that are correct, incorrect, unsupported, poorly supported, and once again, can let the PACE organization know or give them a file of those codes with corrected codes so they can submit it to CMS. Once again, if you're showing CMS that you're submitting redacted codes, CMS doesn't think that you're poor coders. They instead say, listen, you folks are taking time to look and once again, redact codes. So that's considered to be good. So we help a lot with their auditing. And then the auditing also helps with risk scores as well, because our coders are uncovering diagnoses that might have been missed. We're looking for assessments that the provider and the PACE organization thought was successfully submitted into the risk adjustment processing system or RAPS, only to find out that the codes never got in for one reason or another.
Okay.
So by uncovering that, we can also help improve risk scores because we're submitting data that everyone thought got in but didn't. So that's kind of the auditing at a high view. We also do data analytics to make sure data is getting in. We have what are called client service liaisons who meet quarterly with our clients to talk about or making sure that all the ICD-10 codes are getting in. We can look at HCC prevalences, risk score projections. So we can help a lot with the back office management, the health plan management of a PACE program. And then lastly, with the physician part, we try to do good education. And as you've heard me say before, Ankur, I think it's wise to remember that just because you are a world-class physician does not make you a world-class documenter. And the reason being is because it's not taught in medical school, nurse practitioner school, internship, residency.
Correct.
And so what we'd like to do is we'd like to try to train physicians. I like to say how to fish. There are many organizations that are out there that help a PACE programs giving them a fish. You may get retrospective reviews. You may have coders looking for diagnoses that might have been missed along the way. But we actually train physicians, once again, how to capture everything and then to be able to spell it out in very specific terms. And so that helps with risk score. And there's no question about that. But Ankur, I would like to argue that it has everything to do with quality patient care. Mm-hmm. And if I could, let me give you an example. Actually, we were at a conference together just recently, and I mm-hmm. used this example then as well. I'm seeing a patient, and the physician says to me, well, Mike, I want you to see this patient. What's wrong with him? Well, he has cardiovascular disease. Well, I think I know what he's saying. And so I think about that for a moment. I said, well, what's wrong with his heart? And the physician said, well, nothing's wrong with his heart. He has peripheral vascular disease. Oh, okay. Well, we've moved the ball a little bit down the court a little bit. Well, peripheral vascular disease. So is it problems with the arteries or with the veins? Because the vascular system is both. And the provider says, Mike, you know, when we say peripheral vascular disease, we mean the arteries. We never mean implying the veins. And I would say, well, then why don't we be specific? He says, okay, Mike, well, the person has, or the patient has peripheral arterial disease. Mm-hmm. And you say that, and the very first word out of my mouth is, well, where is it? And then the provider next says, well, okay, he has atherosclerosis of the right femoral artery. And then my last question is, well, do they have claudication or no claudication? And so we've gone from cardiovascular disease down to atherosclerosis of the right femoral artery without claudication. Mm-hmm. The degree of clarity between those two diagnostic statements is enormous and can only lead to better patient care because there's absolutely nothing being left for interpretation as to what exactly I mean. And I like to think that's a large part of what we provide, quality patient care.
No, that's a very great explanation, especially, you know, for a lot of the audience that Dr. Brad, Dr. Kanuka, Dr. Vilner, they all were previous medical directors, and they are educating the PACE medical directors and other providers when they come to the center or remotely. So what is, if you had to explain risk score 101, what is risk score and how it benefits the PACE organization?
Well, a risk score is this. It's the expected cost of taking care of a patient or participant in PACE compared to the average cost of in Medicare. So cut to the chase, we spend around $13,000 or so on the average person in Medicare. This risk score, it's an HCC model that it's able to predict this. If you're an 80-year-old male living at home versus a nursing home, also on Medicaid, because this is, remember now, this is a Medicare product line. That's all demographic information. If that's your patient and he has heart failure and COPD, this is a predictive math model that's able to say his expected cost is going to be $26,000. So his risk score will be his expected cost, $26,000, divided by what we spend on the average person in Medicare, which is $13,000. His risk score will be 2. So risk scores are really telling you how costly your given patient is or participant compared to the average person in Medicare. And in PACE, it's important to get accurate risk scores because that risk score is being multiplied by what's called the county payment rate. Medicare has calculated what it costs to take care of the average person in Medicare for every county in the United States. And they do that because cost of care varies based on where you live, with urban areas being a little more costly than rural areas.
Okay.
And so this risk score is taken times the county payment rate for where that individual patient or participant lives. And that becomes then the monthly revenue that you're going to be getting to take care of that patient. So accurately telling CMS just how sick your participant is will generate better risk scores and better revenue.
And is that also, that means a county in New Jersey, County A, the payment might be, the base payment might be different, and County B, the payment might be different.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Okay. And then I remember you always telling me when you optimize and you had that kind of a formula that if my risk score goes up from 2.3 to 2.4, there's some difference in the amount I get paid.
For every 0.1 that a risk score goes up, it's around $1,200 additional dollars for that given participant. So you look at risk scores and you hear relatively small numbers with lots of decimals and you think, well, doesn't really much matter. It turns out it matters a lot.
So if your risk score goes up from 2.4 to 2.5, and if you have 200 participants, that means you are close to $250,000 more in revenue per year.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
So what is the because I know, again, you mentioned that, you know, in medical school, nobody taught us how to be a good documenter. And here we have to be. So what is like the medical director's role for this risk adjustment? And what tips you want to give it to the medical director that how they can be involved and what they can do to help optimize their risk score?
I would suggest that medical directors audit their provider's notes and once again, be looking at them and see if everything that they would find that they would want to put on the assessment is what that individual provider has done as well. So auditing charts from that perspective, I think is very important. And if you happen to be working with Capstone as well, we suggest that you be very aggressive in making sure that when we have our webinars, that you have all the important stakeholders, if you will, on that call. So it would certainly be all the providers. Given the topic, we're talking about psychiatric illnesses, perhaps you want to have your social workers and clinical psychologists on as well, or if you happen to have, you know, a psychiatry, once again. So once again, making sure that you're making good use of the time we're spending in our education. And then again, if you happen to be working with Capstone, we provide you with certain reports, one's called the HCC Opportunity Report, or affectionately called the HOP Report. And another, which is called the Audit Suspect Worksheet. I had to think about that for a minute. Where we're providing you a lot of possible diagnoses that a provider should consider when they're doing a face-to-face semi-annual visit. And once again, championing that and making sure that that's being done becomes very important. And typically that happens, but we do have one or two clients where that is not happening, all that I just explained, and they're suffering with low risk scores or unimproving risk scores, if that's a word, as a result.
Great. So if somebody is any PACE organization or a medical director, you know, the new year is coming, 2024, like how they can prepare themselves for the new year that, you know what, I want to capture, document everything for the year 2024. So what are a few tips that you would like to give them?
As you know, in this model, the diagnosis that you put in 2023 will affect risk scores in 2024. And one thing I would suggest that medical directors do, then Ankur will switch to 2024. But between now and the end of the year, I would take a good look at your participants who have low risk scores. And you can easily do that if you get the MMR report, the monthly membership report, and if your organization can give it to you in an Excel spreadsheet, you can sort it for, you know, by risk scores and look at your participants with low risk scores. Has anything been missed? And maybe if so, bring those people with low risk scores back to the clinic and making sure that during a face-to-face visit, all of their problems are being addressed, making sure they're all being captured. Or once again, look at your participants who have zero or maybe just one HCC. That may be true. That may be all the more they have. Again, you get into risk score based on functional disability and not on risk score. So that very well may be they have zero or perhaps just one HCC. But once again, look at them to see, bring them to the clinic, make sure that we have an opportunity to capture everything here in 2023 that will help you in 2024.
So that's what I call the November and the December push.
There we go.
November and the December. So all the medical directors who are listening or any executive director, let your medical director know that you still have an opportunity to do the November and December push. What Dr. Brett mentioned about the low-hanging fruits. I even call them, those are the fruits on the ground, pick it up before it gets rotten, is your 0 to 1 HCC. So if you have, just making up a number, 150 participants, and you have 10 participants with 0 to 1 HCC, those are the participants you want to actually make sure, see them in the clinic and document appropriately to capture the risk score there. And what Dr. Brett was talking about, the HOP report, those are the times that actually you need to look into it. And Dr. Brett, with that, the unspecific diagnosis, if we can talk about that, that we frequently use, unspecified depression, do not have an HCC code versus a specific depression has the HCC code, and how that differs with the reimbursement.
It's really important that you're as specific as possible. One of the things I always share with our clients is be specific, be more specific. And once again, if we think about it, just like the example that I said with atherosclerosis of the right femoral artery without claudication, it has all to do with quality patient care. But at the same time, and by the way, what we like to think about a capstone is this. Learn how to document completely comprehensively with high degree of specificity. You'll end up with quality patient care. And we're fond of saying HCCs and risk scores will take care of themselves. But the example you use is quite true. Once again, you might say that you have a patient who has major depression, a single episode, and boy, it sounds like you've said a lot, but that diagnostic statement will not map to an HCC. Saying that they have major depressive disorder, single episode, moderate, or in partial remission. Now we've said enough that's going to capture the HCC. But once again, think about it in terms of clarity. You know, again, adding the fact that it's mild, moderate, severe, or partial or complete remission, you've more completely described that given patient that only can lead to, again, better patient care.
So I always wonder, so now over the time that we have seen fee-for-service, now there's a big noise about, you know, value-based care. PACE has been the forefront of value-based care. How do you see, does this risk score also apply outside PACE? And what are some examples that outside PACE, the work that you do for risk adjustment, and how the future looks in outside PACE for risk adjustment?
Oh, sure. You know, I'm fond of saying that fee-for-service medicine may not be dead, but it is dying. And I think most everyone is aware of the fact that CMS is pushing hard to make sure that by 2030, which is not that many years from now, all Medicare will be, once again, in a value-based program of some sort. So you can look at a lot of initiatives that are out there where risk scores are playing a significant role. We have a number of physician organizations, some very, very large independent physician organizations that are going to Medicare Advantage and simply going at risk with them. They will say, listen, we'll take the risk and once again, and share in their profitability in that way. And then there's a lot of CMMI projects that are coming out now, and many of them I think are well known, including the ACOs, including the MSSP variety. And more recently, starting last year, was the ACO REACH program. And once again, we have a number of our clients, a lot of FQHCs and other organizations
really?
That are once again participating in these models of care. And once again, what I think it's a great move because we're moving away from just simply, you know, taking care of patients and throughput.
Correct.
Again, and now saying, well, listen, let's answer the question, but is the patient doing better? And rather than just, well, we saw them for 15 minutes, here's the CPT code. That's not really quality medicine.
That is a good point that you mentioned with FQHC, especially because FQHCs have been coming into, you know, are getting more attraction in PACE. And also I have noticed that FQHC is still a fee-for-service world, but their risk score matters.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see more FQHC eventually going towards value base?
We're seeing huge movements in that regard. And not only in FQHCs, but in a lot also with those organizations that do home care medicine and home care medicine alone. There are, a lot of them are participating in this new ACO REACH, and there are several varieties of that, as you well know. But one in particular is called the High Needs ACO REACH. And a lot of home-based care is now filtering in that direction. FQHCs as well are many are participating in the MMSP variety or in the ACO REACH standard model.
Yeah, and when you do your work with the larger organization outside PACE, is it like a similar rules that we have what's in PACE? And is it a similar way you do risk adjustment or there are different rules?
No, interestingly, we talk about this as an HCC model, but there are many different HCC models that are out there, Ankur. So as you well know, PACE looks a lot like Medicare Advantage. We happen to use in PACE what's called for our HCC model version 22. Medicare Advantage right now is using a blend between version 24 and 28. There is a separate model for people who are on chronic dialysis, end-stage renal disease. As you know, there is a separate model for Part D. And then even for the ACO REACH high needs, they have a separate model as well. So there's many different HCC models that are out there that we here at Capstone need to keep familiar with because, you know, that's where our clients are what they're using.
So, Dr. Brett, we are coming towards the end of our show. And before we go into my favorite part of the rapid fire round, how can listeners reach out to you?
Oh, I'm readily available. Please reach me by my email. And my email address is my name. My correct name is George, so it's G Brett, G-B-R-E-T-T. And then if you just remember the name of our company, which is Capstone, and you take the vowels out of it, you're left with C-P-S. TN as in Nancy.com. So my name, G. Brett, at CapstoneWithoutTheVowels.com. And seriously, we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay. If you could step into my shoe, what would you ask yourself that I didn't ask you?
Actually, Ankur, what you should have asked me was why didn't you become a dentist? I have three generations of dentists. My grandfather was a dentist, my father was a dentist, and my son-in-law is a dentist. It just skipped right over me. And I think the answer is because to be a dentist, you have to be really smart. My dad skipped two grades, not just one, he skipped two grades. I didn't get the smarts. Number two, you need to be really good with technology and all these new devices. And that's certainly not me. And number three, you know, you want a dentist that's really good with their hands. I can't hammer a nail. So, you know, it just skipped right over my generation, and I became a physician instead.
I will definitely ask you that question sometimes again in future. So now we'll go to rapid fire round, where I'll ask you five questions, and you can answer in 1 to 2 sentences. So you ready?
Okay. Yes, sure.
What does failing means to you?
Failing means understanding that if you don't fail, you can never get better. I had a good friend of mine in med school who also taught skiing, and he made the point very, very well. If you go skiing, if you're not falling, you're not learning how to ski. You will never become a skier unless you fall and fall a lot. And we like to think also here at Capstone, again, we want to hear, it's nice to hear and makes you feel good to hear, oh, excellent presentation, Mike, but that's not particularly helpful. I'd much rather hear, can we have some constructive criticism as to how we might do it better?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to fail to get better.
Great, great answer. Describe pace in one sentence.
One sentence, pace. Pace is holistic care for the frail, elderly, disabled, mostly indigent population, providing them quality care in both the home and in their medical conditions as well.
Thank you. If you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change about pace?
You know, I think I'm going to steal a comment from Sean Bloom here, who's the executive director for the National Pace Association. And that is, it should be as easy to get in pace as it is to be admitted to a nursing home. People can be admitted to a nursing home in a day or two max, and we don't have quite that same facility here in pace. And I would like to see us move in that direction. I think that would be it.
And this is a little personal question from me, because you have been a great mentor, Mike, during the PACE days that when I started to now. And I always love to be around you, surrounded by you. Your positive energy is great. And you have contributed a lot to PACE. So thank you for that. So what message do you have for medical students and residents on why they should go into geriatrics?
Geriatrics, that would be the field for you if you like providing, again, holistic care, and I like to call it vertical care. You have a chance to intervene with the patient and follow them throughout the course of their life. You need to be very comfortable with dying and the death process. I would suggest even from a spiritual nature, from wherever you're coming from in that regard. You need to be very, very comfortable with that. But it gives you a chance really to see the patient not from a disease and treating them, but more look at it as an illness and how you're healing them. Because you may not be able to cure the disease, but you can do a lot to keep them healed and whole. And if that appeals to you, then geriatric medicine would be the way to go.
Yeah. And I always say I feel complete as a doctor in geriatrics and very high satisfaction on what I do.
You know, and I think about that, Ankur, and I'm sure you've had many, many experiences like this as well. So often I would be going back to the hospital and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and the patient is dying. There's nothing I'm going to do to make that patient better. But the moment you walk in the room and the family says, okay, it's fine. Dr. Brett's here. Dr. Patel's here. It's maybe a little bit of the art of medicine, but it's an important part of medicine that you're just there in present in the moment is so helpful, even though you may have no magic wand to get them better. They appreciate that you're there because they know that you're there for them.
And last question, one positive message for our listeners.
I would say, listen. I like the expression. It goes like this, something like, I'm not arguing with you, Dr. Patel. I'm just explaining why I'm right. Okay. But I think it's so important, once again, that listening is so much the art of medicine. I'm sure you as well, after you've been a physician for a number of years, I could walk into the exam room to see a patient for a follow-up visit. And within 90 seconds, I could have all the information I need. I could walk out of the room and know exactly what I need to do after a few questions. But to sit there and to listen, to allow the patient to have a bit of a catharsis, if you will, to unload all the things that's wrong with them, is so important, and that you listen. I forget the studies are done. A lot of physicians think they're going to go in and listen to the patient, and they interrupt within like 10 or 15 seconds is the most amount of time you're allowed to talk before we start interrupting. I would suggest for everyone who practices medicine, the art of medicine is to go in the room and shut up for a while.
Yeah, be a good listener. Dr. Brett, thank you very much for being my guest. It was wonderful talking to you.
Oh, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it, Ankur.
Prescription Health is brought to you by Tabula Rasa Healthcare, a leader in providing patient-specific, data-driven technology and solutions with a mission to enable simplified and individualized care that improves the health of those served. For more information, please visit TabulaRasaHealthcare.com.